Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
And the truth that is rooted within me.
Hello, to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice, the Forgiveness Doctor. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Or join us in the chat room or email me at me@whyagain.com. Hello.
Hi, sweetheart. Delight to be here. We've got this cool, it feels like an autumn morning, but of course it's spring. Beautiful day in Ashland, Oregon. Blue skies, wispy, white clouds, sunshine. Awesome. Thank you, God, for a wonderful day. Good morning. And we welcome you to the show. We're here to do the work of forgiveness. And forgiveness defined as, it was defined when it originally showed up on the planet in Aramaic. And it has to do with changing what's going on inside of us, not to do with letting other people off the hook because there's something going on inside of us. So we welcome you to the show. If you're not familiar with our forgiveness process and how it's done, we invite you to go to www.whyagain.com. On the right-hand side, you'll see a link that says Download Worksheets. And if you click on the first link, you'll have a free download of Chapter 24 of my book, the latest version of it, and the latest understanding of forgiveness from the Aramaic. If you click on the second link, then you will have a copy of a 7-Step Reality Management Worksheet. We're working on editing the actual chapter 24. It still has the old 12-step, but it's a pretty easy intuitive shift to the 7-step and makes it a little simpler to become engaged in the process of forgiveness. So we're inviting you to engage in the process of forgiveness, and one of the things that we're inviting everyone to do in order to celebrate Memorial Day, once again, I think we're on day 19 today, Jeannie? I believe it's Memorial Day 19. We decided on Memorial Day, for those who might be new to the show, to celebrate Memorial Day every day from here on the rest of eternity to honor those who have been killed, forced to kill, those who have been maimed, injured, and the families who've suffered as a result of that or as part of that, that we honor those people, truly honor them, not by having a big party and getting drunk, but rather by saying, I'm willing today, one more day, to find something in me that's based in hostility or fear, which contributes to war, and forgive it. So we invite you to pick up that worksheet process and do some of that work around letting loose of what never belonged in a human form in the first place. So we're here to join you, empower you, support you, play with you in doing that process. And so we are delighted and honored that you're here with us. Jeannie, do we have any callers on the line? Is Dr. Tim with us? Is David with us? I know David's on the road, and I talked to him, and he wasn't sure he was going to be able to get a signal where he was. That was an hour or so ago. He's driving to Louisville, Kentucky from Heartland.
David is on the phone, and so is Tim. We don't have any questions yet.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. How do you be this morning? How's your journey going, David?
It's going well. There may be some background noise here, so I'll be on the show as long as that I can, and thank you guys, and I'm on my way to Louisville. I've got 20 miles from Paducah.
All right. Well, say hello to the Duke of Paducah for us. Tim, how do you be this morning, sir?
Just great. Having a wonderful morning. We have sunshine and mild temperatures here in the
Chicago area and enjoying that.
Cool. Well, I looked up a little bit of the information you gave us yesterday on the movie War Torn. Tim, thank you for that. I watched a video clip about it and ordered the movie, so I'll be watching it and getting more information on the basic message of that. And, of course, part of our work, actually the whole of our work, is about healing war. And, you know, whether it's the interpersonal war, you take the person who looks in the mirror with eyes of hatred at themselves, and they're at war. And the bigger world expresses those individual wars. In fact, you can go back in the ancient Aramaic where they understood a thing called cause law. There's actually a word, pokdani, in Aramaic that is not translatable in any other language that I know of, because there's no such concept in any other language. And pokdani means what's behind what's behind. What is back of and superior to all of the appearances of the world? In the Aramaic language, if you're not familiar with the fact that that's what we're working with, I'm the director of a foundation that's translating a copy of the oldest known New Testament in its original Aramaic language into English. And that language, it turns out, is a physics language, it's a genetic language, it's a psychology language, it's an energy system theory language, it's a language about physiology, and it understands and explains all of those things. It's also a language about human behavior and personality. And you can go back, and if you start to extract religious significance, you find some awesome advice there, and you start to see the application of a set of principles that were understood. And you can look back in the book of, I believe it's the book of James, 1 James. And, you know, one of the cores of this work is inviting people to let go of denial. And there's a passage there where James says, stop your denial. And then just a little bit later, he says, do you not know where the wars come from? Do you not recognize that they come from the war or the conflict within your members? And he's speaking to them as individuals, and he's saying, inside of you. So a cause level, back of and superior to war, there's something going on. People go out and protest and march, and that's nice and that's good, but that's all dealing with effect. And what we're looking to do is to deal with cause. And they understood in Aramaic, cause law, back of and superior to the appearance, there's something. Now, I use an example in the On Creating Consciously workshop. Let's imagine that we have a concrete wall here, and back on the other side of the building, there's a projector booth with a camera, and there's a bottle on the table, and it's a 3D projector, and it projects a picture of a 3D table and bottle on this concrete wall. Let's imagine that we bring somebody from the jungles of South America, someone who's never seen anything more complex in a dugout canoe, and we ask this person to move the bottle from one side of the table to the other, and we offer them whatever reward they want if they can move the bottle. And of course, knowing nothing about projectors and 3D images, they see a table with a bottle on it, and they walk over and they attempt to pick up the bottle to move it, and of course, the bottle doesn't move. Somebody hands them a jackhammer. They really want the reward. It's like something they really want. Somebody hands them a jackhammer, and they punch a hole in this 18-inch thick concrete wall, upon which the table with the bottle is projected. And, of course, the bottle doesn't move because there's no cause there. The man is trying to change an effect. Now, he can try and manipulate and move that every which way but loose, and it's not going to change. Now, let's imagine you walk into the room and somehow communicate to this fellow that you're wondering what he's doing, and he somehow shares with you that he's trying to move this bottle, and you say, you know, you look pretty sweaty after using that jackhammer. Here's a bottle, a glass of nice cool water. Why don't you sit down, relax, take a drink, and I'll be right back. And you have the key for the projector booth. You go to the other side of the building, you open the door, you go inside, you walk over to the table, you move the bottle from one side of the table to the other. When you come back, our friend from the jungle sits on his hands and knees worshiping you. You are so awesome. You're a miracle worker. You did something I couldn't do, and you weren't even in the room. Wow, are you ever awesome? Could you imagine yourself saying to this person, excuse me, sir, worship is not appropriate. Please, stand up, get up, get up, get up, please, get up. The things I do, you too can do, actually greater things. You just got to know where the projector booth is. If you could imagine yourself saying that, because you know what's back of and superior to the appearance on the wall, you're able to change it. If you don't know what's back of and superior to war, you can go protest and fight at the top of the hole in the wall. You know, we actually have people who fight for peace. And that's because there's a war in their own members, inside of them. And once we recognize that that war is inside of us, then what we need to do, if we actually want to be something other than a house divided against itself, you'll notice how many of these ancient scriptural ideas that I'm calling on, because they're principles, and you notice how they fit into an understanding and a set of principles as to how the world works. The dogma and doctrines based in hostility and fear have nothing to do with the teachings of the man named Yeshua. They are not accurate. They are not appropriate. There's nothing there based in fear. It's about how to achieve a life based in being an actual human being, and to achieve a life based in the actual presence of love. And so once you recognize that, then you listen to this idea of you can do the things I'm doing. Now, of course, the fear-based doctrines put you in a whole different category and at a whole different level. You know, for those who've ever been to a Y workshop where Jeannie's asked the question, how many have ever held a newborn child? And everybody's answered some variation on the theme of love, and there on the left side of the board is a list of loving attributes of a human life. And if you've listened to her ask the second question, how many have ever done something they regret, on the right-hand side of the board, she ends up with a whole list of people's descriptions of what they were feeling when they did what they regretted, and their feelings are anger and rage and sadness and fear and grief and pain and trauma. The fear-based doctrines and dogmas start you off right on the right side of the board, totally, completely against what the man named Yeshua said, the things I do, you too can do, and greater. So we want to place you back. We want you to place yourself back on the left side of the board, back on that list of loving attributes of a newborn, because that's your original nature. That's the original nature of every human being on the planet. But when we deny, we dissociate from something we don't want to deal with, it's painful, and we put into our members, as James called it, we put into our inner structure those things that we don't want to deal with. And we hide them away, and then we find somebody else to come along. And when that somebody else comes along and resonates those things in us, we make pictures of them, total illusions, total hallucinations in our mind. If you've ever been accused of saying something you never said, doing something you never did, you know exactly what I'm talking about. This person's living in a total hallucination. And in that hallucination, they believe the problem's outside them, and all they have to do is kill it. And then everything will be okay. And that's just like the guy, you know, trying to beat the bottle on the table to the other side of the table. He's trying to change an effect. So our request and celebration and honoring those who have been killed, forced to kill, maimed, injured, and those who have suffered as a result of that, we ask you to please look into your members. Look inside of yourself. Is your physiology still capable of any form of hostility or fear? Let me say that I know mine is. I'm still doing my work. I haven't finished. It's no short-term project. It's no project for wimps. We're uncovering a mysterious insanity that has been going on in our bloodlines individually and collectively for 1,000 generations. If you want to clean it up, you must develop a skill. And that skill is the skill of being able to decode everything that's in your unconscious or your dissociated mind and your genetics. If not, somebody will show up with the decoder, and you'll feel pain, and you'll blame them for your pain. And when you blame them for your pain, you'll want to get rid of them in some way, shape, or form, and now we have war. If I can stop in those moments and breathe and go, what's the skill I need to develop? It is a skill that, as far as we can tell, at least 99.9999999% of humanity in all of human history has never developed. And that is skill of being able to decode what's going on at their own unconscious level. You've got to be able to open and go into and undo the genetics based in hostility or fear, the genetics that place you, when they're resonated, on the right-hand side of the board. And, of course, oftentimes, or maybe always, against your own will and choice. And so to do that becomes the work. Now, I usually ask at this point the question of people when I'm doing a live workshop, the first time you sat down at a computer, do you know how to turn it on? And most people kind of laugh and go, well, no, I didn't. And that question comes from the first time I sat down at a computer and went, well, hey, how do you turn this darn thing on? So if you recognize that you didn't know how to turn it on, then I ask you the next question. How many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours, and again, this is a projection question because that's what it's taken me, have you spent learning to use a computer? It's been a lot. In order to figure out and understand how your own internal device works, which is the most complicated computer on the planet, excuse me, you're going to have to be willing to devote at least as much time in order to create a true human life. If you find yourself functioning out of hostility or fear, if you find yourself feeling and experiencing hostility or fear, then your work is learning how to undo that, how to remove that, how to hit the delete key from your carbon-based memory system. And we call it a carbon-based memory system because if you talk to a physiologist, you'll find that the base element of your body is carbon. That's its basic element. And carbon stores information within this structure. It's a database. And it stores information from generation to generation to generation. What we're looking to do is invite you to understand that if your physiology, your carbon-based memory system, can produce any form of hostility or fear, then you have a conflict within your members. And by holding that conflict within you energetically, you radiate an energy, a measurable energy wave that contributes to conflict and war on the planet. Becoming an unhealed healer, wanting the world to change while you refuse to do your own work, isn't going to work. When we come inside of ourselves and remove the very capacity to experience hostility or fear, we get to the point where we actually start to live a human life. And that's what we're inviting everybody to do, and to honor those who've gone before us by picking one issue you're willing to heal today and move through it.
Michael, we have a question in the chat room.
Yes, ma'am.
They say, is the ancient Aramaic studies considered an Eastern philosophy?
Well, the Aramaic language, interestingly enough, is a language that was spoken as the lingua franca of the Middle East. You could go anywhere for thousands of years. You could go from the Middle East to the Great Wall of China. And virtually everybody that you ran into knew Aramaic. It's kind of like English today. You know, I've been in India, I've been in China, I've been in Tibet, I've been in Greece, and we've been in Sweden. You know, everybody speaks English. Well, back then, Aramaic was the language that was commonly spoken around that area of the world, all the way to the Great Wall of China. So the text that we're working with actually comes from the Middle East, and the ancient teachings of the man who's traditionally called Jesus, but his name was not Isus. Look into the Greek language. Isus means hail Zeus. His name was not Zeus, and it was not about hailing Zeus. The reason why he was called Isus is because, remember that this was being taken to the Greek world. The Greeks didn't particularly like the Jews. You know, and this man, Yeshua, was Jewish. So a Jewish name, it just didn't go over very well. So what do? If you're trying to convert all of these people to your belief system, what do? Well, you give them a name they can accept. Well, hey, what about Zeus? Let's go with one of their gods. His name was Yeshua. for those who are prattling about you got to call on a name, it would seem like you might want to get his name right. His name was Yeshua. So he was someone who thought, taught, and healed through an understanding of Aramaic ideas. If he sat in most places where the Greek interpretation of those ideas shows up today, he would say, that's all Greek to me. It's not what I said. It's not what I meant. You know, I use an example of, actually I did this the other day, so I don't need to go into that example again of the misinterpretation and misunderstanding. But so it comes from the Middle East, to answer your question. Any thoughts, questions? Tim, since our conversation yesterday, do you have any thoughts for us, having brought that movie War Torn up and conversation?
I would want to clarify that I'm not exactly recommending that movie War Torn, except that if somebody wants to do some work with a stack of worksheets, that movie is probably going to stir up more than most movies you'll watch, especially related to war. They did it very graphically, and what they're trying to point out is that the pattern of trauma from war has been around for as long as we've tracked history, and they were trying to combat a group of people who were saying post-traumatic stress disorder is a set of excuses people use to get benefits from the government, or it's a thing people use to try and avoid having to do their duty. And they were just trying to track the history of it as a serious set of consequences when people engage in that violent behavior or have to witness it. And it was done in an exceedingly graphic way. So I would only refer people to that if they were actually working to try and spread awareness about post-traumatic stress disorder, and with the advice that they should have a set of tools with them, either something like the EFT energy work, the tapping acupuncture meridian points, or a stack of your worksheets to try and process through what will inevitably get stirred up in them if they watch something that disturbing.
So my thought on that, my input would be, of course, a few flickers of light and a plastic cone vibrating on a television set can't cause anything in us. It's got to be in us to start with. So, and I can remember a time period where I wouldn't go to a violent movie. I just wouldn't touch it. And one day I had the guidance to go to a very violent movie. And as the violence started, it's like, what am I doing here? I don't want to put this in my field. And what came back out of my guidance was, Michael, you have a belief in bodies and violence and things that are done to bodies, and holding those energies in you is going to produce that in your world. You're a creator. This is what's going to produce results in you. That's the cause level. If you refuse to work through that, then what you're going to do is you're going to get to live it in true living color and Dolby sound. You're going to bring it about in your life. So I did do this movie, and now I go to violent movies all the time. But I don't go to put the energy of the violence in my structure. I go to breathe and forgive and undo whatever that movie stirs up in us. So absolutely, we'd suggest that you have tools beside you. But if there is all kinds of disturbance and pain and anger and rage in you that you wouldn't otherwise get to look at, and I guarantee if you got a genetic structure, it's there, then on an energetic level, you are, even if you want world peace more than anything you can imagine, you are a contributor to war. In the ancient Aramaic, again, this is physics, Yeshua said, you're a house divided against yourself. So if your genetics, there's fear and pain and violence about war, and every person on the planet has that, because every person on the planet has been, you know, traumatized by war. For somebody to say post-traumatic stress disorder doesn't exist, excuse me, in the last century we killed 130 million people on this planet. Now, to hide our heads in the sand while we have that genetics and pretend that all I have to do is be nicey-nice isn't going to cut it. We have to go in and deal with the war that's in our members. Now, let's come 2,000 years forward. There's a book out there called A Course in Miracles. And a lot of people who work with A Course in Miracles, it's kind of like, well, you know, we just want to be nicey-nice. Everything's peaceful and wonderful, and everything else is an illusion. And the Course says, you may wonder why you must look upon your hatred and realize its full extent. We have to go inside ourselves and deal with the level of cause. We have to forgive everything in us that is unlike love, or we will produce over and over and over again the results that we hold within us: war, violence, death, suffering, pain, and trauma. Those who hold post-traumatic stress disorder, and I would offer that most people who were brought up in a home are suffering post-traumatic stress disorder today. That's why there's so much hostility and fear on the planet. That's why the murder rate is so high. That's why the suicide rate is so high. Because if you were brought up in a home, and go back to our codependency, you can look back in the archives to the beginning of our codependence workshops, which is maybe a month ago now, and we point out that the human being is love, that we're made of the stuff called love, and that it is our birthright to have our caretakers functioning as love. If you were brought up in a home where your caretaker wasn't functioning as love continuously, you have post-traumatic stress disorder. Because the stress, the strain, the pain, the trauma of having had to give up the direct experience of a human life, and again, if you want to just define a human life, hold a newborn, that's what we're designed to live out of. And if we were brought up in a home where that wasn't our experience, the trauma and the pain of having to give up that direct experience to buy into the insane way the world works creates post-traumatic stress disorder. And it's virtually every mind on the planet that's experiencing that right now. What we're looking to do with this work is to support a core group of people, as large as that core group of people would like to be, who are willing to say, okay, I'm going to be brave enough. I'm going to go in. I'm going to allow everything that's in my genetics that's based in hostility or fear. And by the way, if you've got nothing in there, there's nothing to be concerned about. I'm going to allow it to resonate, to come forward. I'm going to learn to decode it, understand it, and remove what doesn't belong from my field so that my human form, with all of this genetic history, is a place that is a fit instrument for me to express in as a human life, as the active presence of love. Now, if you've got post-traumatic stress disorder and you live in a world of hostility or fear, that sounds like the most insane conversation we could have. I would offer, it is absolutely sane. I would offer that if you hang around the work long enough and you come to understand it deeply enough, you can go inside yourself. You can remove all hostility and fear. And whatever anybody else in your world is doing, you can come from and experience a mind and a physiological system filled with love. That's the essential nature of the teachings of the man named Yahshua. You'll notice he would not give up his human life, love, for anything, including those who would kill his body, which, of course, means that by maintaining the proper power supply love, they couldn't keep him dead. You know, that leads to resurrection. So, you know, we're here to support people in learning those tools and understanding them and moving into a true human life. When we get enough people who have human forms to actually incarnate as that newborn energy that we all are, when enough people will do that, there will be an energy upon the earth that will encircle the globe and touch every person's genetics on the planet. And those genetics are going to start to open and they're going to start to heal. And we're going to see a whole different process happen. All we need is to use the tools. If you're willing, if you've got the courage to be one of those that says, you know, it's actually pretty easy for me to do hostility and fear. In fact, it's totally effortless for me to do hostility and fear. But it's really the hard way to live. Michael, what you're talking about sounds like a lot of hard work, but I realize that living this way is the really hard thing. And so I'm ready to go for it. I'm ready. Remember, Yeshua said, take up your cross. He didn't say, take up my cross. What does taking up your cross mean? It means you go inside yourself and you clean up all hostility and fear and come to a state of healing. That's what we're here to do. That's what we're here to create support for you doing. Jeannie, you got a question for us or comment?
There was a question in the chat room about how water is linked to thought. And I told them that, and you can add to all of this, that we are mostly made up of water. And that, you know, we agree with Dr. Emoto and how the change in the water crystals just from words and thoughts. And so the words and thoughts that we have changes the water crystals in our system, in our so-called physical body. And then I went to another flip side of talking about water and saying that, you know, our intake of water, that it needs to be, you know, clean, healthy water. And then the conversation went on that when we pray over food, that not only are we giving thanks for the food, but that we're also, you know, if you put that positive thought in there, it changes any negative energy that might be in the food or the water before you drink it or eat it.
Yeah, if we bring an actual human life present, we can start to transform everything around us. And water is just a membrane storage system. That's all. It just stores frequencies. And so when we store frequencies of hostility and fear in our bag of water called the body, then we get to play out hostility and fear when we decide to shift and change that. And forgiveness isn't about letting other people off the hook because we have some form of hostility or fear in us. Forgiveness is about how I go inside myself and change the content of my own carbon-based memory system, my own bag of water, and remove hostility and fear. Now I've got a place to embody my human life. And that's what we're here to do. David, are you still with us? Do you have any thoughts for us?
I am still with you. It's going to be noisy. Let me pull over. Do you have a question for me?
No, I was just wondering if you had anything to share on the conversation at this point.
Yeah, let me come back on. Let me get over here where it's quiet. I'll copy you right back on.
Okay. Tim, you have any other thoughts? And by the way, our phone-in number, if you want to call us and give a comment, a question, is 646-200-4169, 646-200-4169. And when you call in, if you've got a question or comment, hit 1, and that will put you in a queue to ask questions. David, you might want to mute your phone while you're pulling over. We're getting all the road noise. David is the property manager at Heartland, and he is on the road traveling to a family wedding in Louisville, Kentucky today. So. Tim, you have any other thoughts in the conversation so far?
Well, I do. I'm not sure we'll hear me over the road noise. Can you hear me?
Yeah, why don't you do that? Ginny can mute him.
Okay.
Okay.
Better. Good. The thought I had was about one of the more recent things that came up for me, and that was going to bed one evening and hitting the pillow at about 10:30 and just getting comfortable and then realizing that I left my bicycle on the back of my car unlocked and that it had been there probably 5 or 6 hours. So I got up, and instantly I was upset, and I got up and got out of the bed and pulled some clothes on and was heading out, and Christy asked, what's the matter? And I said, I left the bike on the car. And she said, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to go out. I'm either going to, like, if the bike is still there, I'm going to lock it on the car or bring it back into the garage. And she said, well, you don't want to lock it and leave it on the car, do you? And instantly, what shot out of my mouth in upset was, no, what I meant to say was, I'm going to go see if the bike is on the car, and if it's still there, I'm going to come up and ask you what I should do with it. And then I walked out of the room, and with each step I felt worse and worse. And I thought, why did I say that? And so I walked downstairs and brought the bike actually into the garage and came back upstairs and apologized and said, I'm sorry, I was obviously just upset with myself for leaving the bike out where it could be stolen. And then I realized I needed to go do something with that because there's clearly upset energy in me that I wasn't aware of. It was a very nice day. It was a beautiful day, and it was a nice evening, and we were settling in for bed, and all of a sudden there was all this upset. So I did some worksheets, and then I did the NET work I do on the energy work that tracks down where a disruption might be, and it went back to very early in life. And when I did the release, I remembered a long series of upsets and times when I let anger get the better of me from grade school and high school and college days, and I was struck by lots of grief. And so that was a very powerful release and a set of worksheets that really uncovered that I seriously beat myself up every time I let anger erupt from me.
Mm.
So that was one of my most recent big pieces of work, and I thank you for the tools to help dismantle that.
Delighted. Awesome. And, you know, we've been running a thread since we did our codependence series, which ran over a couple of weeks. If somebody wants to tap into the archives and look at those, if you tie this in with the whole codependence thing, you know, with the stress, the judgment of self, I left the lock off, the goals you had for self, the goals you had for bicycle, the goal you had for thieves, would create an ultra-stress condition. And so what you can track back to is looking back to when your power person did that very behavior to you. Because when we become ultra-stressed, we do exactly the behavior. And it sounds like what you did was turned in a sarcastic way to the person that you cherish in your life. And so the invitation might be to look at how it felt when your power person turned to you in a sarcastic way and made comments.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of that that came up. My father was one who treated people very well for the most part, but would get very upset at inanimate objects when they didn't function the right way, or you know, if a bolt was stripped on a project he was working on, or so. There are more worksheets.
So you can bet Tim that he got very upset with animate objects, but was probably pretty good at keeping it in dissociation, keeping it hidden. But that wouldn't change, you know, because we come out of the genetics of the person who conceived us with that resonating in him, even though he was likely, I would be very shocked and surprised if he only had upset around inanimate objects and had no upset around humans when they didn't cooperate. And notice this was about your inanimate object, your bicycle. But I would be very shocked to think that he would not have had the same qualities of upset, but had learned, probably because of his power person dynamics, to keep it muted, to keep it hidden, and not express it. But on an energetic level, it still would have been radiating. And because you have the same genetics, you know, the only thing we know that can stop the high energy wave that leaves the mind when it thinks the thought is another set of brain cells in resonance. And or the only thing that can stop the high energy wave that leaves the genetics is a set of genetics that's in tune. And so that's probably one of those 77 times 70 worksheet issues to turn with that sarcasm.
Yeah, it's clear. And I have to acknowledge wholeheartedly what you're saying. I could sense when my father would be upset, but he wouldn't externalize. He wouldn't blast out with anger when he was angry at a person the way he would about a tool or a machine that wasn't working properly. But yeah, he was. I could feel him get tense and upset. And I also, you know, I was raised with a lot of sarcasm. so that, as you said, it was really the only socially acceptable way of expressing otherwise unexpressible rage.
So then the rage, when she asked what you were going to do, pointed toward her, would have been about what dynamic between you?
Well, as far as I've gotten is to just fully be aware that I wasn't angry at her at all. I was angry at myself for leaving the bicycle outside where it wasn't secure. And the upset came into me the moment I realized the bike was there and that I had to get out of the comfortable bed at the end of a long day and go out and do something about it.
Right.
And as I was getting dressed, I was wondering... Yeah, and I was wondering if it was even going to be there, because it's entirely possible if I hadn't been near the car for 5 or 6 hours that anybody could walk by and just pick the bike up and walk away.
Right. So that would be the stressor. So that would put you into the ultra-stress condition. But the verbal sarcasm was pointed at her. And I would invite you to look at perhaps, seeing as how your comment to her was, that you were going to go and see if the bike was there and then come up and ask her what you should do about it, has to do with being controlled. And her question was about, or the reality that came up in you was perhaps about being controlled, and that's why that unacceptably expressed rage came out, pointed at her in sarcasm.
Yeah, it resonates more with the idea of questioning my judgment. So that if I had gone down and decided that I wanted to just lock the bike and leave it on the car, then her saying, well, you don't want to do that. That's a bad judgment.
Right, yeah, okay. So being judged.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, geez, another 77 times 70 worksheets. Awesome.
Well, easy
for
you to be
happy. So how did it feel when your power person, pardon me?
I said it's easy for you to be happy.
I apologize, Tim, but you know I'm here holding the space. And how did it feel? And I acknowledge your courage, you know, the professional as you are, to be able to just go for it. And how did it feel when your power person questioned your judgment and informed you how your judgment wasn't very good, that you made poor judgments?
Well, that was one of the more painful things in my life and my relationship with my parents. I always wanted to make the good judgments and get, you know, be seen as somebody who was smart enough to do the right thing. So
that
was very painful.
Welcome to the club. Been there, done that. That's most all of us humans. Because, of course, the world doesn't teach us when we're in that stage of development and growth that our essence is love. Our world teaches us that our essence is dependent upon the approval of our parents and the people around us. And so, you know, that old song of looking for love in all the wrong places, when I'm looking for somebody to approve of me and I call that love, I'm doing that because I've given up my true essential nature. And again, in all the years I've been doing this, the few times that I've seen somebody able to go really in a process level, go all the way back to the moment at which they gave up their direct experience of being love, buy into a non-approved of non-being self based in hostility or fear, holds such, I can't say a word big enough, horrendous pain. There's the root of the post-traumatic stress disorder that virtually everybody on the planet is working out of. And if we're really honest, we really need to go back. I know it's like it's a giant piece just to get that it's possible, but to really truly go back to the moment where I was functioning as love. There's a cool line in the story about Vincent Van Gogh, and it kind of, you know, gives a reference to this, and it speaks of the being of Vincent Van Gogh. And I believe it was his brother who's writing the song. I'm not sure. It's supposed to be from the brother's perspective. And the line in the song is, I could have told you, Vincent, this world was never meant for one as beautiful as you. And in order to enter into the game that's being played on the planet, most of us have to give up the beauty, the being, the awesome experience of the direct active presence of the love of God and trade it in for a non-being self. I'd offer that's what's behind every suicide. You know, we talked yesterday about the 40 or so suicides between the active servicemen, about 20 a day and 16 a day, according to VA statistics. And VA apparently only checks in about 25% of vets. So very likely the daily veterans, those who are outside of the service who are not in active service, is probably at least four times 16 a day. And somebody wants to question whether there's such a thing as post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, you know, it's kind of normal, so I can see why somebody who's living in post-traumatic stress disorder themselves and is in denial of it, that I'm doing just fine. Well, yeah, I kicked a cat every once in a while. Well, yeah, I raged at my kids yesterday. Well, yeah, I gave my spouse the look, and I, you know, I looked at myself in the mirror and thought hateful thoughts. But, you know, that's just normal. I'm doing okay. I don't have any post-traumatic stress disorder. And as David said the other day when we were talking about it, most vets are like, no, I'm doing just fine. You know, well, yeah, I drank a fifth of Scotch this morning already, and, you know, I'll have another fifth this afternoon, and I'll smoke a little weed, and I'll do a little coke, and, you know, I'll rage a little, and on it goes. You know, the world's in post-traumatic stress disorder from the simple event of having had to give up the direct experience of the active presence of love. And we each need to go back and reclaim that, because that's the source of war. That's the source of 110% of every pain, of every turmoil, of every disease that we will experience in all of our lives. And the willingness to be able to soften this physiological system enough to be able to open it, to be able to develop the skills to go there. Again, you've spent hundreds of hours learning to use your computer. You're going to have to spend hundreds of hours learning to use this body-mind unit consciously instead of it running you and using you. You know, most people run their lives just like a computer runs the information that's in it. They're run by the database, and it's time for us to stop being run by that database and to heal. And I sure do appreciate your courage and your willingness to assist us in bringing these issues forward, your courage to be able to speak of them directly and courageously and honestly, and to support all the people that you're supporting. For those who don't know Dr. Tim, he's a psychologist that practices up in the Chicago area, Crystal Lake has a support group every Tuesday evening working with the Tools of Forgiveness. And it's awesome to be sharing the planet with you, Dr. Tim. I really do appreciate it.
Well, you're entirely welcome. I feel exactly the same. I know that I've been watching my progress over the last 6 or 7 years that I've been exposed to this material, and certainly the last 6 that I've been doing the support group. And it really does, it has helped accelerate my process, because as a therapist, I've done a lot of different techniques and therapies and group work and meditation and breathing, but it's really accelerated over the past 6 years from exposure to these tools and then the support of having that group each week. It's like a gift for me, because often people aren't willing to share their struggles, so I get support to work out my struggles. So it's magnificent.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we've got David on hold. He's getting ready to come in. But before we do that, Jeannie, just let me throw out one more thought, and that is just recognizing that this work of the return to being has been a development from humanity's first fight, our first act of violence. And one who actually does the work required and experiences a direct return to being regains this estate of love that we're designed for. And when they do, they're freed from any propensity toward violence in any of its guises, whether it's mental, verbal, emotional, visual, financial, religious, that the abuse just disappears. The words of hostility and fear begin to disappear. And the words of one who speaks of such a possibility, you know, ring a bell inside of virtually everyone. And the journey, it's an appealing journey, but it's not an easy journey. And we invite you to set the intention to achieve the result that we're talking about, a total return to being, and then on a daily basis to set the goals to do the work that it takes to go there. It is a huge, huge undertaking, and we acknowledge everyone who's willing to go there and do that. And Jeannie, would you key David in with us so that we can say hello once again?
David, you're on.
Hey there, David. How are you, sir?
I'm doing really well. Let me put this on. Let me fix this. There it goes. Is that better? Can you hear me?
Good, good. We got you.
Okay. Just a couple of quick thoughts around the, especially with the one caller that called in and asked about water and so forth. And the thing that came to my mind was, as you talked about this container within, you know, it's water and it holds information. And when we look at this, the biggest challenge that I have is to remember that this is an energy, for me to remember this is an energy system, and that I've created this energy system out of my thoughts. And that transition to, when I can remember that there's nothing going on, that this is just an energy system, and when I look at it versus an energy system, then it's simple for me to see, wow, okay, well, there's an energy. This energy is just being resonated. It's being triggered, and it's firing. You know, there's energy that's sparks coming off of it, or however the person may visualize it, that there's currency, that there's, and it needs to either be resolved or it needs to be let go of, you know, to dissipate it. And, you know, it is great to have the support and the people that are calling in and interested in it and just staying with it. You know, it's the whole idea of staying with it and recognizing that this is an energy system.
Absolutely. Nothing physical about it. And as we realize that, that's the stuff we're made of, and that's the stuff we get to heal. So, and concurrent with the, you know, the one of the base mistakes is the belief that there's a physical world. If we listen to Einstein says, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we've heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. And so matter doesn't exist. If you listen to Max Planck, he's receiving the Nobel Prize in physics. And he says, as a man who spent his entire life studying matter, I can tell you this much. There is no matter as such. He says, our entire world is made up of succeedingly smaller patterns of vibratory fields, nested one within another, within another. And once you recognize that, then what have you nested in your field that causes you pain? Not what's wrong with your body. Because if you say what's wrong with your body, you just started out with a whole incorrect premise. If you start with an incorrect premise, you know, it's kind of a principle of mathematics. If you start with an incorrect premise, you'll end up with an incorrect conclusion. You don't have a body. There's nothing wrong with your body. You have an energy system. You've nested some frequencies that distort what look like your cells, but that's just an appearance in the mind. And when you start to see through that, then you realize that your field is in a series of nested frequencies. Some of them belong there. Some of them don't. You want to remove the ones that don't. And so that one of the base mistakes is believing that the body is a physical thing. One of the other base mistakes is thinking that love is something that we do or that others do to us. That's two of the base problems of this whole dilemma that we need to resolve. Love isn't something that you do. It's not something anybody can do to you, because love isn't about doing. Love is a state of being. Hold a newborn, you get a direct experience of love. You get to experience exactly who you are. And when you get to experience exactly who you are, you get to start to shift and heal who you're not. And that's called forgiveness. Most people would rather blame and find somebody else at fault. And so when it was said, you know, the first law is you must love, and they name three objects of attention, God, neighbor, self. That law was saying not something about a behavior toward them. It's got nothing to do with them. Love is the state of being. It's what you are. So that commandment, and it's interesting, I've heard people who just who jeer and are sarcastic about, following some guy that tells you you have to love everybody. What an idiot he was. It's the most genius piece of advice ever given on planet Earth. Because if you don't maintain a human life, you're dead. And he wasn't saying something about behavior toward them. He was saying, maintain your newborn existence. Maintain the active presence of love, whatever object of attention you think about. And if you have a nested frequency based in hostility or fear about any object of attention, then that nested frequency is going to rip you out of your human life. He said, don't be concerned about what can kill your body. Be concerned about what can kill your being, your soul. And so the command wasn't about doing something toward a neighbor. The command was maintain your state of being as a human. And you will heal every nested frequency that never belonged in you. And as you get that, everything starts to shift. Now, if it seems that in the face of hostility or fear, how could that possibly happen? How could you possibly do that? There are a few movie tips I have for you. Go see the movie Invictus. You know, we're going to suggest some movies like that one, War Torn, that you sit with worksheets and you'd be ready to do some work, because it's going to bring up all kinds of stuff that you've maybe never wanted to look at, maybe been denying and dissociating from your whole life. I promise. None of it will be stirred up in you if none of it is in you. If none of it is in you, you have nothing to be concerned about. If it's in you, you want to go there and clean it up. So work with the forgiveness process. And now some others, you know, go and see the movie Invictus, and you'll watch a man who spent 20-plus years in prison, who was horribly abused simply because of apartheid in South Africa, because of the color of his skin. And he comes out of prison, and he's elected to be the leader of the country. And the people in his party, who are lesser men than he, who live in hostility and fear, the movie's about the rugby or the soccer team in South Africa. And that soccer team, as I understand it, was a symbol of apartheid, a symbol of all the oppression of blacks in South Africa. And those who were living in hostility or fear, who were part of his party, they we're going to just dismantle and get rid of this team. And here's the one who can hold the space of love and functions out of a human life. He made use of his time in prison. He gained himself a human life. I don't know much about his history before that, but he came out of prison with a human life. And he says, wait a minute, guys. And his party, there were a lot of people who were violently opposed to what he said. He said, no, we're going to use this as a symbol of our healing because we need to heal. And so this man goes forward in a state of love to the very symbol that everyone who's been a victim of apartheid hates. And he uses it as a space to heal, and he works with the white members of the team to make them a winning team again and bring the country together. It's awesome. Watch that movie, Invictus. Go see Gandhi. If you think it's not possible, watch Gandhi and watch a human being in action, the actual presence of love. You and I can do that. You and I can re-embody as the active presence of love and create the best day yet of our eternal lives, and the same for every person on the planet. I join you in that. And bless you.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. AGAIN.com.